Welcome to the Run for God Run Club, where you will find God in a runner's space.
Welcome to the Run for God Run Club. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. Today, we're going to talk about aging. Is there anybody out there who's aging? Maybe a little? Don't look at me. I'm not. And then I want to share some lessons I learned from a little race I ran this weekend. We are back to our usual setup after taking a week with John Campbell last week, and I hope you enjoyed that, but you know what that means. Back across the desk from me is Run for God founder, Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. You know, I'm happy to yield this seat anytime somebody wants to come share their story.
It's always neat to hear
this. It's great when we talk about them, but it's even better when somebody shares it in their own voice. Because you get all the deflections and the emotion and a lot of the stuff we can't really capture when we're telling other people's stories. So great job to John, by the way, and Darren a couple weeks before that. So again, if you're out there, you know, we're in Dalton, Georgia. I will yield this seat anytime to somebody that wants to come in and tell their story. So if you're in the area, give us a call and we'll set that up.
Amen. That's cool. Yeah.
So you mentioned in the opening, aging. My wife was just talking about this past weekend. I guess it's me getting older, but she was kind of telling somebody about how I will often say, it's about people in our church. Somebody be asking about their age or something. And I'm like, well, they're about our age. And she's like, no, they're 20 years younger than us.
Yeah.
But I guess that's how I feel, is I feel 20 years younger.
Yep. We're the same way, Debbie.
But my wife, my helper, tells me otherwise.
Thanks for the reminder. Oh, my goodness. Well, our post last week came from Haley Sharp. She says, hi, new member here. I love running, but as a stay-at-home mom, I don't always have time or energy to go for a run. I recently decided I wasn't going to make excuses anymore, and I needed to make time or take the kids with me. So this morning, I packed up the kids' bikes and went to the track for a short and very hot run. While my run was full of interruptions, it was a great morning to just get out and get my legs moving. So very thankful to have found this group and blessed to be able to run.
You know, this made me think, I saw her post on the group, and it made me think of a graphic that I saw just recently, and it showed up, you know, how you like a battery indicator on your phone. Which showed a person, you know, waking up and the battery's almost full. And then it shows them, you know, going to work and doing all the things during the day, and the battery's getting lower and lower and lower. And then it shows them at the end of the day going for a run. And after the run, the battery charger's full.
Yeah.
And it's that graphic, it really is true how we feel like a lot of times we're just too tired to go for a run or a walk, but actually, you feel invigorated when you get done.
Yeah, and it's a true thing.
It's a strange thing.
Yeah. What I like about this is that she's taking her kids with her and showing her kids what good exercise looks like. Because, you know, I've noticed with the college team, when I was coaching the college team, I would watch these ladies as they graduate. And some of them would continue to run after they graduated and some wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And I noticed there was a connection. The ones who continued to run after they graduated were the ones whose parents were also very active. Mm-hmm. The ones whose parents were not active, they did not continue to run afterwards. And so I think that what we show our kids means an awful lot. And so with her doing this right there with her kids and saying, I'm not making excuses. I'm just going to get out there and I'm going to get it done no matter what, because it's worth it.
Sure.
Our kids are seeing that. And of course, the other thing is kids need to be active as well, right?
Sure.
I mean, that it's important for them to start doing that. But kids tend to find a way to get at, as adults, we don't do that, right? As adults, we don't find a way to get active no matter what, but kids typically do. So we don't worry about them so much when they're kids, but it's good for them to see purposeful exercise, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's great to set the example, especially if you've got young kids out there. I mean, you and I have talked about all the different ways that we've gotten workouts in the past, and many times it's as part of our kids' activities. Our kids' activities aren't an excuse not to. I mean, how many times have we ran to practices or walked to practices? How many times have we got our workouts in while kids are getting their exercises in and things like their workouts in or practices or whatever it is, taking bikes and having them ride their bike? I mean, there's so many ways to not only get creative and get the workout in, but create that example in the process and showing the really anybody, not just the kids, but those onlookers that, hey, just because I'm busy doesn't mean I can't stay active as well. Because that's, you know, what's the number one excuse for not staying active?
I don't have time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the people that make it a priority, they figure out how to get it done and they feel good as a result of that. They have more energy as a result of that.
That's a good point. Good point. Way to get out there and get it done, Haley. And welcome to Run Club. Trivia question from last week. We were talking about Quincy Wilson. Quincy was one of the youngest to ever run track and field in the Olympics. But who was the youngest American to run track in the Olympics? And the answer to this was somebody, honestly, I'd never heard of before. So that makes it cool because I like learning new things. Esther Stroy was 15 years old and 64 days, just barely 15 years old when she ran the 400 meters in the 1968 Olympics. She made the semifinal, but she was injured and didn't make the final, but she made it to the Olympics. I thought it was interesting. She was from Washington, D.C. Quincy Wilson, also from around Washington, D.C. So both of these young people running both of them running the 400, both of them from around the same area. But if you want to know who the youngest track and field athlete ever is, that actually was somebody from the Ivory Coast. Celestine Endrin, I'm not sure how you say her name, but she was the youngest. She was 13 years old when she competed in 1976. Again, a 400-800 runner in this case. I don't know what it is about the 400, but 400 seems like a hard race to me, but I guess, I don't know. Kids seem to thrive in
sure.
it. And if you're wondering about the youngest Olympian in any sport, it probably would not surprise you to know that gymnastics had the youngest, because we see that a lot of young people sure. in gymnastics for sure. The youngest documented Olympian is 10-year-old Greek gymnast Dimitrios Londras. The youngest female athlete was also a gymnast, Luigina Giovatti, she was Italian. And she competed in 1928 at 11 years and 301 days. More recently, in 2020, we had a 12-year-old in 2020. I did not realize that at the time, but it was a table tennis player by the name of Hend Zaza from Syria. Was 12 years old competing in table tennis in the Olympics. That's just crazy. And, of course, skateboarding competitors are typically, we know that they're a lot of times they're young. But, of course, I'm still having a hard time with skateboarding being in the Olympics to start with. To me, that's an X Games thing. But
yeah.
I get it. It is in the Olympics. And I'm pretty sure they're not going to ask me what should be or shouldn't be in the Olympics.
I don't think you'll be getting a phone call.
No. They should, though. They should. By the way, the Olympics are coming up this weekend. So we get the Olympics to look forward to here over the next few weeks.
Sure.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, Dean, so let's talk about something. We're going to continue to talk about this on the podcast for the next couple months. But if you're out there and you've ever thought about Run for God and what it could do for your community, we've got the answer for you. Maybe some of you out there have been around Run for God for years and years and years, and you know what I'm about to say, but many of you out there who may have been with Run for God since COVID may have no clue what I'm about to say. But we are bringing the church model back. What is the church model? I'm glad you asked, Dean. The church model is simply where you can teach a 5K challenge, the Couch to 5K, in your community, at your church, and really share both your passions, your love for Christ and your love for running or walking. And you can do that in your church. And we make everything easy. Now that we have partnered with Upward, we're kind of going into their system. This is what they do best, the church model, doing sports in churches. And so you're going to start to see some communication. If you're on our email list, you're going to start to see some communication over the next few weeks. We're kind of putting our finger in the air and getting the pulse of where we're going to be in January, because we got to make plans for the amount of churches that are going to be starting this. As you've heard me say, I would like nothing better than to see 100 churches do the 5K challenge starting this January. How many have we done through the years? We've had roughly 6,500 5K classes have been taught in communities around the world over the past 13 years. But that kind of went away with COVID, and now it's coming back. So we're pairing Run Club and the church model back, or not back together. It's together for the first time, really. And it's going to be pretty magical. So if you're interested, let us know. You're going to start to see some communication. Click on that. Yes, I want to teach a class this January. There'll be a button on there to something to that effect. But we would like nothing better than to have a front row seat to see you. And yes, you can do it. You know, you might be out there saying, I can't teach. I couldn't either 13 years ago. But I did. I stepped out and I did what I felt like God was calling me to do. And it's the best decision I ever made. We would not be sitting here today had it not been for that decision. So
true story.
I'm challenging you. I'm daring you. Whatever you want me to say, I'm doing that right now. I want you to join us in January. Let's make 100 seem like a small number. Who knows? Amen. Who knows what God can do? But I know that we're bringing it back, and we're insanely excited about it. So more details to come.
Yeah, amen. I love it. Also, don't forget that if you are a walker and you're not a runner, or you know somebody mm-hmm. who is a walker and not a runner, you are welcome. You're 100% welcome. We have separate training plans specifically designed for walkers.
Sure.
So please understand that walking is an option. I know in the past it's been called Run for God, and mm-hmm. we call it Upward Running, but it's walking too.
Sure.
So make sure that you don't feel like I'm getting into this group that does something different from what I do. Mm-hmm. It's not that at all. If you're a walker, you're welcome, and you will be fully embraced as a part of our group. So how much running do you think a soccer player does in the course of a game? If you were to guess, what would you think?
Well, I looked down and I saw the answer.
Yeah.
So I can't, but I was in my head, I was comparing it to a basketball game. They say the average NBA player who's a starter in an NBA game runs about 7 miles in a game.
Well, I'm going to share something with you here in a bit, but
really?
Yeah. Now, soccer, they do run about a 10K.
Yeah.
They run about a 10K. They've done some studies, and midfielders run a little bit more, almost 11K. The backfield runs a little bit less. But overall, around 10K. Even the goalies run a 5K during a race. I had no idea the goalie moved that much, but they do. And the way they cover it, you think about the way a soccer player covers ground in a game. It's like an interval workout, right? Or a fartlek workout, at least, where you're sprinting and then jogging, sprinting, jogging. It's a really good workout. They say that about 10 to 20% is at a moderate or fast pace.
Right.
That's a pretty good bit of what they're doing there. So they get a pretty good workout in during these games. Now, I had always heard that NBA players run about 10K in a game, but a recent study shows that they run about 2 to 3 miles in a game, which is a lot different than 10K. I had always argued that basketball players were one of the best athletes in the world because they're running a 10K, you know, three times a week, and that's not true. They're running 2 to 3 miles on average. So
when you say they did a study, what does that mean? To me, it's just math. I mean, they know average how many times up and down the court, and then you just take that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how they did it, but this is what a study came out to be. It was 2 to 3 miles, and which means the 10K thing had to be overblown because there's no way two different real looks at this could get that different of an answer.
I do know is that when I was in probably the best shape of my life, back when I was running a lot, I was asked to come play a game of pickup basketball at my church.
Yeah.
And I was probably running, I don't know, 40, 50 miles a week at the time, in great shape. And I thought, okay, yeah, I'll go down there. Dean, I hurt. And it was a bunch of teenagers, and I was probably in my mid-30s at the time. I hurt for 2 weeks.
It's a completely different kind of running. Yep.
My ankles hurt. And I was like, how am I this? But it's not out of shape. It's just different. You're out of shape for that discipline.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Tennis players run 2 to 5 miles a match, which I thought was interesting as well. It sounds like that they run maybe around a mile per set is what it comes out to be. So I didn't see a breakdown of this, but I would be interested to know who runs further per set, men or women? Because it seems to me, watching tennis, that women, their points last longer. They tend to hit the ball more.
Mm-hmm.
Men tend to play such a power game that a lot of times they're only hitting it once or twice. And women tend to rally more. So I would think women run more than men do on the tennis court. I didn't see a study on that, but I think it would be interesting to check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, men play 3 to 5 sets while women play 2 to 3 sets. So the men probably still run more, but I bet they don't per set. It would be interesting to see. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting to look at other sports in terms of how much they run.
Sure.
Well, I know we have a lot of, let's say, more mature people in Run Club. So how about a story about aging? And who better to present that viewpoint than our very own Jerry Snyder? This is called The Other End of the Table. Age is an issue of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. That comes from Mark Twain. I have been part of the running community since 1986. 5Ks, 10Ks, half and full marathons. And like just about everything else, the fine art of running has changed. With the magic of new fabrics, the clothes have gotten warmer when they need to be and cooler when the weatherman changes the forecast. The colors have gotten brighter and the patterns bolder, and the shoes are just as magic with new styles to make you run faster. Technology has steadily added dozens of gadgets and gizmos to the mix. None of this is a surprise. As a frustrated consumer pointed out, the only place change is not guaranteed is a vending machine. But there is one big change that gets my attention every time I enter a race, and there doesn't seem to be much I can do about it. I'm talking about age groups. I began my running adventure in the 35 to 39 age bracket. Since then, I've shuffled my way through 40 to 44, 45 to 49, 50 to 54, 55 to 59, 60 to 64, 65 to 69, and now my home is 70 to 74. The late, great, and very funny Phyllis Diller made these observations on the subject of aging. You know you're getting old if they have discontinued your blood type. You know you're old when someone compliments you on your alligator shoes and you're barefoot. You know you're old if your walker has an airbag. So far, none of those things has been said about me, but I'm prepared with a response if it happens. I'm not sure who said it first, but I agree it's the best way to think about the clock and calendar. Don't count your years. Make your years count. At most running events, near the registration table where you pick up your number and t-shirt, there's another table. This is where the trophies or medals are lined up for first, second, and third place winners in each age group. When the race is over and they pass out the awards, they begin with the youngest age group. I remember when I first started running, at the award presentation, the race director would make a big deal about the oldest runner in the pack. This is usually the final award of the day. Now, I'm getting closer to that end of the table where the medal for the oldest runner rests. In the movie True Grit, starring John Wayne and Glenn Campbell, Wayne needs rescued, and he is cussing at the fact Campbell is dead. Suddenly, he hears a voice. It comes from Campbell. "I ain't dead yet, you bushwhacker. Hang on." Wayne gets rescued, and Campbell dies shortly thereafter. Norman Vincent Peale, author of The Power of Positive Thinking, said, "Live your life and forget your age." That's my message, cowboys and bushwhackers. I ain't dead yet, and I look forward to seeing you at the next race.
We have got to get Jerry sitting in this chair.
We really do. Yeah. Someday. Yeah. True Grit was a good movie. You ever seen it?
I've actually seen
both versions. There's a John Wayne version, and then there's a version they did later, and they're both pretty good. Yeah. So, check that out. This is up my alley because, you know, obviously I'm much older than you are, but, we've talked about the Fountain of Youth for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I grew up in Florida where they talk about Ponce de Leon a lot. Mm-hmm. So the Fountain of Youth was a big thing. But we're all going to get older. There is no Fountain of Youth, and there never will be. And I'm amazed at how different 60 looks today than it looked when I was 30. You know, now it just doesn't seem old now, you know. But when I was 30.
Is that
30,
denial? You think that's,
I don't know.
Just denial?
I don't know. Which do you think it is? Debbie and I kid around all the time. We say it's weird how everybody around us seems to be getting older while we don't.
Yeah, it's kind of like me going to church and saying they're about our same age. Let's put it this way. Do you think your kids look at you at the same age as you looked at your parents at that age? Meaning, when I was a kid, I thought my parents were just ancient.
I've never looked at my parents as being old.
Really?
Yeah, I really haven't. I never did, not even when I was a kid.
Hmm.
And I think it was because my parents were a little bit younger than most of my friends. So I saw my friends' parents. They looked a lot older than my parents did. And so that's why I never thought of my parents as being old.
Hmm.
Yeah. So a little different for me. Was it that way for you?
Yeah. I mean, I thought my parents, I mean, when I was like in school age.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, they're older. They don't know what they're, you know, it's typical teenager. But I feel like my kids don't look at me that way. But is that just denial? I guarantee if we got Lane and Landon in here right now, they would say, "Oh yeah, yeah, you're just an old man."
But, yeah.
Funny story about age. I don't know if I've ever told this on here, but when we wrote the very first 5K challenge, I guess I was in my early 30s, and the book was sent off. You know, it was done through Lifeway, that first edition, and they wrote the I don't know what you call it. I should know what you call it. It's basically a short biography on the back of the author. And it was just a short description about me. And it said, I remember it says, "Mitchell is a young man who blah, blah, blah," whatever it said. And I'll never forget, like 8 or 9 years later, we were doing like the third or the fourth edition of the 5K challenge. And we were doing our internal review of reading through and seeing if there's any changes, things that need to be updated. And my wife came to me and she said, "I think we need to change something on the back of this." And I said, "What's that?" I said, "This thing has been through so many copy editors. There should be no mistakes on the back of that." She said, "It says Mitchell is a young man."
Oh,
and I was like,
ouch.
So what's wrong with that?
Oh.
And it's like it hit me. Reality hits you in the face sometime. And I thought, you know, it she's does. Right. And so it no longer says Mitchell as a young man, but I still hold on to that sentiment, Dean.
Well, it's funny because whenever, you know, like a lot of times at church, they'll be like, you know, we need a bunch of young men to do something, you know, whatever.
And we raise our hand. We're like, oh, yeah.
I feel like I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I'm the younger guy who can do the, you know, that we need somebody to crawl around in this tight space. That's me. That's me. I'm the young guy that can do that. Yeah. Yeah. I still think I'm that guy, but
yeah,
I don't know that I am. Job 12:12 says, is not wisdom found among the aged? Does not long life bring understanding?
I guess there's one thing I do embrace, and it's my hope is that as I'm getting older, there is more wisdom. And I don't think I grasped that when I was younger.
I don't think you can.
Yeah.
I don't think you can understand that when you're younger.
But I can, a lot of times you'll see it through your kids. You'll, you know, the apple truly doesn't fall far from the tree. So I will see my boys doing something that is a path that I went down when I was their age. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And I can see their response is the same response I had back then. But that is something that is great to feel, you know, because we're a little slower to speak sometimes nowadays, not always, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of value in the wisdom that God gives us in our older age.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that wisdom and being smart, not the same thing.
Not even close.
Yeah. I look at the world of academia, and listen, if you're out there and you're a teacher, I'm not pointing at anybody in particular.
No.
But in general, there are a lot of really smart, dumb people out there.
Sure.
And you see a lot of it in academia, and you see how they look at other people as if you don't know what you're doing or talking about. And the truth is they have no wisdom at all.
Right.
And the difference between wisdom and being smart are completely different. And it's as a Christian, whenever we hear somebody put us down for our beliefs, it's very often a person who is intelligent, or at least they think they're intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're too smart for this Jesus stuff, you know. But with wisdom, you gain a lot of wisdom from reading that book that we read every day.
Well, I mean, it happened to me this morning. I was on, my morning Facebook because I don't have it on my phone anymore. So I get on there every few days on my computer. And there was a gentleman on there, and he was just bashing the church. And I know the guy well, and it just hurt my heart. And I really stopped because, I mean, and as soon as I saw it, I wanted to just go after him, and which I would have done 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago. And I just prayed about it. God, help me understand how to handle this situation. And what I haven't gotten the how to handle it yet, but very quickly I got the how not to handle it.
Yeah.
And it was close to the computer.
Yeah.
You're going to do no good. Zero good by engaging this on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I think the answer is to call the guy.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that confirmation yet, but that's wisdom.
Yep.
And that's exactly something right. I didn't have 20, 25 years ago.
What a good example. Proverbs 9:9-10 says, give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. You know, a lot of people today, they dismiss knowledge of anything that doesn't fit their narrative. We're seeing that so much.
Yeah.
And that especially includes stuff related to God very often. I can't help but see when somebody wants to deny or doesn't want to hear it. They don't want to hear anything about God. You know, you hear people talk about athletes who, you know, they get through with a win and they say something about God. And they're just trying to be good witnesses. They're not trying to, say God hates everybody else and he loves me. But that's what you hear a lot of times. And I feel like those people, it's almost like they're little kids putting fingers in their ears going, no. You know, like, I'm not going to listen. I'm not going to listen to what you're saying. And I think it has led to a serious issue. And I hear my heart when I say this. I really think that we're headed in a direction where one day, if we don't, as Christians, you're talking about a Facebook post, but there's other areas where we have to stand up and we have to make sure that we're not censored and silenced, because that's where we're headed right now if we're not careful. Because there is a group of people that would love for us not to have the right to say anything about Jesus at any time. Mm-hmm. And we have to be guarded, I think, about that.
I was listening to a podcast just this past week, and it made me think about exactly what you're saying. It was Dave Ramsey. I know I talk about him on here a lot, but I listen to him every day, and he was talking about, you know, I think he's got like 1,000 people now on his team, his employees, and they're very much in the digital area. I mean, they are a digital marketing company, basically, which they do great things, and they're pushing this. But he was talking about the steady decline of social media, and mm-hmm. that as a company, there are, and it was because of these reasons, because everything is so polarized now. You can't have a discussion anymore on social media. And I mean, sadly, that's bleeding over to even in person nowadays, but especially on social media. If I would have engaged this gentleman on social media yesterday, and I would have spoken truth, if you think about it, I could have had the most loving intentions, but that will never come through.
Yeah.
It will never come through in written word, because there's so many nonverbal communication that goes on. Like if God does prompt me to call this guy and go have a conversation with, which I'm probably going to do, because I do have a lot of respect for this guy, but that can never come through. And that's where we as Christians, a lot of times we fail, because we start trying to defend, well, I said truth. Mm-hmm. But the love trumps. Love trumps everything.
Yeah.
Love has got to lead. And if you're doing it in a form of communication where the love can't come with it, is it the right way of doing it? I don't think it is.
I think that goes back to wisdom, right?
Yeah.
I do think I see less of that arguing back and forth on social media today than I used to.
Don't because you? I wonder if it's because
I think people I don't
want
wiser.
This to I don't want this to come across, because I'm far from being the wisest. But it's people who understand what social media is doing. They're pulling back from it, which leads to the trends that people are seeing, that social media is on the decline, because people are saying, look, this is toxic.
Yeah,
and it does have a lot. I mean, there is a lot of good to social
for
media,
sure. Mm-hmm.
But the bad, I think, is beginning to outweigh the good, because you're having all these, I mean.
Or more people are realizing that the bad has been outweighing the good, and that's why they're pulling back.
Right. Because like yesterday, I really wanted to say something. I wasn't going to pound this guy. I just wanted to ask a simple question, like, why are you so down on the church?
Yeah.
Well, the way I just said that, in written form, can come across as, well, why are you so down on the church?
That's right.
You know, we read how we think it's being said, not how it's actually being thought through. And so, I don't know. I think that's just a form of wisdom that I think we're seeing played out on a large scale right now. And
I think you're right. Psalms 92:14. They will still bear fruit in old age. They will stay fresh and green. And I like the way that sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the most faithful people that I know are older people. You know, the people who have the best fidelity to the gospel are older people.
Sure.
And it's because they have more wisdom. And the cool thing about getting older is there's always a way for us to contribute to the message. There's always a way for, you know, we're having vacation Bible school at our church next week. And there's something for everybody to be a part and help out. Doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are, you can help out in some way. And that's what's one of the cool things about being, we never retire from sharing the gospel. We don't ever have to retire mm-hmm. from sharing the gospel and carrying out the great commission.
Sure.
Because there's no age limit to it.
But I mean, the cool thing about, probably the coolest thing about wisdom is that there's three ways to get wisdom. You learn it from your own mistakes, your own experiences. You learn it from the mistakes or experiences of others. Or you can ask God.
Mm.
God will give you wisdom, but you have, but that is, pride many times gets in the way right there.
That's true.
You know, we, for some reason, I think we all have this wiring inside of us that feels like if we don't get it through our own experiences, then it's really not wisdom. And that's just not true. I've had this conversation with my boys sometimes. They feel like, you know, they come up through sport and they understand that suffering is the way you get faster.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be that way with wisdom. But we something inside of us tries to relate it to that, and it's not. It's a separate thing. You yeah. can get wisdom by simply looking at others and what they've done, or going to God and saying, God, I need wisdom here. Scripture's clear that He will give you that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, the truth is about aging is we should all be glad that we're aging. But, you know, you hear so many people say, well, I'm 29 again. You know, that the joke. And I know it's just a joke, but we have to be careful about how serious we are about that.
I'm sorry. I've never heard that joke. What are you talking about? Maybe I'm not old enough. Huh?
Yeah.
I'm not hit 29 again yet.
I don't ever do. I'm always like, look, I'm proud to be the age I am. You know, I'm not 29 again. I'm wiser.
Oh, it's like I've heard people say yeah. it's my second anniversary of my 24th birthday or something.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
I'm wiser than I was when I was 29. I don't want to be 29 again. You know what I mean?
I've never been that. I don't.
A lot of people are stressed.
Yeah.
Over turning.
People talk about their glory days. That's not my glory. I don't look back to see my glory days.
Mm-mm.
I hope my glory days are still to come.
Best days are yet to come. Joel 2:28 says, age should speak, advanced years should teach wisdom. Now, this verse is talking about how everybody's important in the kingdom of God, and they are. And when we get older, it's really easy for a lot of older people to feel left behind. You know, we don't think as fast as we once did. We don't know all the terminology and things that the younger people do. And so we have a tendency to get this feeling that we're just kind of outmoded and we're last year's model and we're not important anymore. And it's just not true. And we have to be careful not to feel that way, right?
I don't ever feel that way, Dean. When my kids say something,
you don't,
this is the new word, I say, no, you're just wrong. The way I say it is the correct way. So maybe there comes that denial again.
Yeah. But, you know, there are a lot of people who are just torn out of frame again about the idea that they're getting older. And don't ever feel, you may feel awkward. That's okay. You do feel awkward sometimes. You don't care that you feel awkward, though. That's the difference. Is you don't care that you're not up with those latest terms. That doesn't bother you.
We've already talked about this. I got corrected the other day on a word I said, and I'm not going to say the word because I'm just not going to say it. But it's Yeah. It's a word that evidently you're not supposed to say nowadays. And my response was, well, that's just dumb.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't know. I guess I'm just in denial about a lot of things.
I think some of that is a different generation or a different mindset, almost wanting to tell people you're outdated. You know, it's almost like they have this
I think
desire.
That's a lot of it. I think it's we have these new rules.
Yeah.
And the old rules are out of date when that's just not true.
Yeah.
A lot of the old rules need to come back.
Yeah.
If you want my opinion, but nobody's asking my opinion. Which kind of brings me that kind of brings me because I looked at this passage in Joel, age to speak, advanced years to teach wisdom. So one thing that I've struggled with, I feel like I've gotten better at, but I've also struggled with as I've gotten older, is I have tried. This has come as a result of my kids getting. I basically have two grown men living in my house now, which is weird. I love it. I love my boys being here, but I mean, it's a weird point in life. I mean, they're both graduated high school. Lane's about to graduate college, and he'll be moving on here pretty shortly. But Landon's still here, and I've tried to become more wise, and I don't answer questions that haven't been asked. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
I've tried to throttle myself or put a bit in my mouth to not just. I'm trying to use not my dad voice.
Yeah.
As much.
I know what
because
you're saying,
that is correct, but I've struggled with. This is where I ask for wisdom here, and this goes with the gospel. This not just my kid. This goes with. The post on Facebook yesterday, to your point, there are times where we need to answer the questions that haven't been asked.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, the question's going to be forgotten about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of my biggest struggles is...
Knowing when.
Yeah, they say that knowledge is knowing what to say. Wisdom is knowing when to say it.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably my biggest struggle in my present age is because I know that there's people a lot older than me that I really watch, and you can tell they've got this down pat. You can tell they're very measured in what they say, when they say, and how they say it. And I feel like I'm past the knowing what to say, but I haven't quite arrived at the knowing when to say it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And so... Maybe I'll get there before this life's over.
Oh, you're way better than you were, right? You think back 20 years
ago, you're way
better. I think I am.
I think I am.
Yeah, for sure. Question, how do you feel about getting older?
I love it. I do. I really do.
I like the old Jimmy Buffett song, I'm growing older, but not up. That's the way I've always looked at it.
Sure.
You know, that I feel like I'm still a kid at heart. I really do. 50, what, how old am I? 58? Mm-hmm. I'm 58 years old, and I still feel like a kid. I mean, not with everything, but I don't know. It's just there's a mindset that you should have, and you shouldn't care that you're getting older, and I don't. And I know you don't.
Mm.
And I don't know. It doesn't bother me to be getting older at all. Now, I mean, I've lost some things. I don't have the coordination I once had. My hearing is not as good as it once was. My vision's been poor for a long time, but and I started losing hair fairly early. But for the most part, I don't ever remember falling down on a run when I was young. That's only over the last 10 years or so that I've started doing that. So it's a coordination thing, right? That's about the only thing that I can look at. But then on the other side of that, I can think, man, my patience is so much better than it was.
Mm-hmm.
And my ability to keep my mouth closed in times when I need to keep my mouth closed is so much better than it was at one time. And I think, man, the trade-off's great. Mm-hmm. I love the trade-off. I'll take it every time.
I think my biggest one is, you know, I got this devotion right here. And if I get to right here, I can't tell you, and I'm holding it close to my face if you're listening, I can't tell you what it says.
Yeah.
But, buddy, I go out arm's length. I can read every word on that page. And that's the biggest thing that I've noticed.
Yeah.
Probably in my life is the vision part.
Yeah.
Getting weird. Because, you know, you take your contacts out, I can read it right here. But you put your contacts in, and which is kind of backwards, you think.
It seems,
God, why did you do it this way?
It is weird.
But maybe there's an answer we'll learn when we get to heaven.
I hope so. Another question. How do you plan to celebrate your next birthday?
He asks some random questions, Jerry.
Yeah.
He does. I don't know. I don't know that I've really – my go-to is Outback. That's my favorite restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, everybody thinks I'm weird, old, my kids, because I say the best steak. Ruth's Chris, all these fancy steak, Outback has the best steak, in my opinion.
You think?
I really do.
Wow.
I really do. And it's a lot cheaper than those fancy steakhouses. So.
No kidding.
Yeah, my birthday's usually spent at Outback.
Yeah, I don't know what all. I don't pay much attention to birthdays. It's just another day to get up, and it's cool to see people wish you happy birthday. Yeah. But other than that, I don't think much about that day. Although, here a few years ago, six years ago, I decided just a few days before my 53rd birthday to run 53 miles on my birthday.
I remember that.
That didn't go well.
That was kind of a day of or day before decision, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I had never run more than 30 miles in my life, and I just thought, I'm just going to run 53 miles.
Was it when I turned?
You ran on the treadmill. I think
when I was 39.
That might have been what gave me the idea.
Yeah, and I decided that morning. Actually, I decided on the treadmill. I was on the treadmill that morning. I was planning to run 5 or 6 miles, and I thought, you know, I'm about to be 40. I'm still 30, so I'm going to run my decade. So I ran 30 miles on the trail. Luckily, I didn't have anything going on that day because I just stayed there. And I think I called you and I said, I'm getting really bored down here. You want to come down here and join me?
I came down here and ran a few miles with you.
Yeah. That was some things we just – there was no wisdom in that one.
No, I don't think
so. It's not smart.
Yeah. Now, I do know a few things I will do on my birthday. I will read my Bible or listen to the Bible in a Year app. I've been listening to this Catechism in a Year. I know I'll do that. I know I'll pray on that day. There are some things I know I'll do. Mm-hmm. And one more thing I know I'm going to do. I'll probably go for a run that day. Mm-hmm. If I am able, then I will go for a run that day. Other than that. And my birthday is actually exactly 1 month from today.
Hmm. And you'll be how old?
I'll be 59.
59.
Yeah, yeah. But next year.
We're going to let you know about that 60.
Next, that's the big one. I can't wait.
New age group.
The USATF, National the Club barrier. Cross Country Championships. All of a sudden, I get to run 8K instead of 10K. That's a big 1.2 miles. Mm-hmm. The steeplechase barriers, they shrink from 36 inches to 30 inches. That's a big difference. I can't wait. I'm so excited to be turning. I wish I was turning 60 this year. Last question. What advice would your older self have for your younger self? I think my
a long list there.
Yeah, yeah. I think my thing is, the main thing that I would say is, none of that stuff you get worked up about is worth getting worked up about. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a general way of saying you don't take everything so, not don't take it seriously. Don't react to everything. And that would make my whole life would have been different when I was younger if I was that way. Hmm. What do you think?
I would, if I was writing a letter and I had to keep it to a couple points, I would say no more often. Hmm. And I think probably that would be the biggest one. I mean, and let me explain. In my, you know, when you're younger and you just feel like you have to say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And it spreads you too thin. We've talked about this. You know, wisdom nowadays tells me find time to do nothing. You know, I just had this conversation with one of my boys of no is a complete sentence. You know, so So no to things that steal your time. No to things that steal your money. Debt, you know, just you feel like you got to have all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not where it's at.
Yeah.
Maybe no to the job that may get you ahead career-wise, but it causes your family to suffer and time away. And I think saying no more. And that sounds weird say that. But
it doesn't, though, when you explain it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I look back on, though, is I look at even the things that I did wrong when I was younger. I learned something so much from so much of it. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have that perspective about saying no today had you not said yes a lot when you were younger and realized that wasn't the wisest thing to do. And so I look back at it, the good and the bad, and I think, I don't know that I would change anything because I'm happy where I am now.
And that's true.
Right?
That's true. Even the bad things that, you know, happened. I look back and I see that's the great thing about looking back on what God's done in your life. And if you look at it through that lens, you see that had that not happened, this would have never happened. And you and I wouldn't be sitting here today. Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, there have been some pretty extremely bad things happened in my life that I look back and today, 20 years removed from it, I can say I wouldn't change it.
Yeah.
But then I would have given anything to change it.
That's true.
And that's the wisdom that only comes from God.
Amen.
It is so hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Sports Run for God Run Club can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join the Run for God Run Club and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to runforgod.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. And, you know, probably everybody has heard about the running of the bulls. Well, the running of the bulls has been this past week in Pamplona, Spain. That's the one we think about. There is more than one running of the bulls, but the one we think about is Pamplona. So they have this at a festival they call Encierro.
Yep. Ooh, you rolled your R's like there. That's pretty impressive.
They release six bulls, and then they have the streets are cordoned off where these bulls have to run a certain direction. And they run through the streets, and people run with them. And it's the craziest thing. The festival is called the Festival of San Fermines. And they do this every day at 8 a.m. People come from all over the world to participate. You have to be 18. You have to run in the direction of the bulls, and you can't have any alcohol in your system. Those are the only three rules. That's it. Nothing else, right? And again, almost everybody has seen some highlights of that. But I wanted. This is the reason I bring it up. There have been 15 or 16 deaths over the course of doing this thing since 1910. There are 50 to 100 injuries every year in this thing. And it's unbelievable that they still have this event. We're so focused these days on protecting ourselves from any potential harm in everything that we do, yet they still have this risky event going on.
How many people participate in this every year? Is it tens of thousands or like thousands?
Well, there's probably tens of thousands of people, including spectators. But the people that actually participate in it, I'd say there's hundreds.
Oh, okay.
Over in that nine-day period, I think there's probably a few dozen each day or something like that. And I'm guessing.
A few dozen participants?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm trying to do the ratios in my mind of deaths per participant. Is it really high for a sport, or is it is it more normal than we would think it is?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because, you know, there's some sports where there's, you know, a lot of people that, I mean, running.
Yeah.
I mean, running. But, I mean, there's a lot more runners, obviously, but.
Right. Yeah, I think, I don't know. I'd say
I like to boil it down to ratios a lot of
times. Yeah. Well, from an injury standpoint, that it is definitely high.
Yeah.
There can't be any question about that. And this year, there was somebody gored this year. Was gored by a bull. Mm. I mean, that's a serious injury if you're gored by a bull. And, you know, most of me says, this is stupid. Why would you do this? Mm. I wouldn't. You know me. I love to do crazy stuff. I'm not running with the bulls. I have no interest in running with the bulls. I don't think I've ever had any interest in running with the bulls. Would you do it? You might.
I used to ride bulls.
Used to ride bulls, so it's almost like running with the bulls.
Yeah, I ran from them a lot.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, you did worse than run with the bulls, really, when you really think about it.
But, you know, I mean, I always said people ask about my bull riding days and how scary it is to be gored. But the scary thing about a bull is not the horns. I mean, yes, gored, that's the gory, crazy way of an accident happen. But the biggest thing you worry about is their feet.
Yeah.
I mean, you got 1,800 pounds coming down on you. That's going to do some damage wherever that hoof hits you.
Yeah.
You know, I had them several different places, and I worry about their feet more than I do their horns.
Yeah.
But now, the running of the bulls, that's a little different breed of bull, and if I had to guess, they're doing something to agitate those bulls before they turn them loose, and they're probably, their mission is to go after you. When bull riding, it's really not that way. I mean, that bull, he's ready to get out of the arena.
Yeah, and he knows he will because he's done it before.
Yeah.
And yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. It is a different thing. But again, and I know animal rights folks are like, they shouldn't be doing this with animals. And I'm not talking about that end of things. And if you're in that end, that's fine. I'm respectful of that. But put all of that aside for a minute. I'm kind of impressed that there's a corner of the world where we're willing to take some risk.
Yeah.
If it's just for the sake of tradition, whatever it may be, I'm glad there's the ability to go out there and take some risk.
I think in my younger days, I would have probably done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've always said crawling down on the back of a bull, there's no better, more acute endorphin and dopamine dump you can get.
That'll get you focused on it.
I mean, we talk about a runner's high, and that's great, but yeah, I mean, there's nothing. It's an outer body experience every time you crawl down on top of something that's 2,000 pounds and wants to get you off as quickly as possible. I think that's probably the same type of person that's drawn to that pure adrenaline. Yeah. You talked about X Games earlier. A lot of those guys is. It's the same mindset. It's purely.
The first guy to do a backflip on a motorcycle.
Travis Pastrana. I mean, he was the first one to do it. I used to watch Travis Pastrana all the time because I really liked.
I do love watching that stuff.
Adrenaline, you know, but not so much anymore. There's no way I would do it now.
Yeah.
But it comes to wisdom again.
But just last week, they cut the Peachtree Road Race off. Because it got to be 90 degrees. And it's
on the 4th of July.
I
haven't heard this.
They closed down now there were a lot of people that were already finished. Darren Lewis ran it. He was already finished. A lot of people were already finished, but they closed Piedmont Park. They closed everything down when the temperature hit 90 degrees. And there's a part of me that wants to say,
then the Peachtree Road Race will never be the same. Because it's the 4th of July in the South, it's going to be 90 degrees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think we have to stop being so scared of taking risk these days. Now, I'm not saying we should do stupid stuff, but I'm saying, listen, if you know what the forecast is for that day.
Sure.
And you have a choice.
Yeah.
You can not go out there and run if you don't want to run. And if you don't want to run, I'm not even going to say, well, you wimp. I won't say that. It'd be like, that's your choice. I want to go run. And if I know that if they would have stopped me from running, I would have been mad.
Sure.
I would have been really mad.
Because especially some race like that where it's it's an ordeal just to get to the start line with that race. And it's the reason I've only ran it once, because it's like, golly, but you're worn out before you get to the start line.
It's true. Well, and I just ran a 100-miler where it was actually worse than it was at Peachtree.
No, so, I agree with you. I mean, a society without risk is not sustainable. I mean,
And if you're out there and you're yelling at us, going, "No, they should protect people," that's fine. You can have that opinion. We just kind of share in ours. So we're not trying to say. I just think adults ought to be able to make their own decisions. That's all I'm saying.
You can't. There's no way you can eliminate risk.
That's right.
From society.
That's right. There's a risk. When I drove over here, there was a risk.
Right.
Getting on the highway.
Sure.
No. All right. It's time for Dean's Thoughts. And that's a time when I share something that I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Well, I ran a race this weekend. It didn't go well, but I learned some stuff from it. So I thought I would share. This is called Race Lessons. I ran a race this weekend. It was a little 5K close to home. My goal was to see where my fitness level registers this week. As far as performance goes, it did not go well. Let's just say I'm not happy with my current fitness level. So I perused my thoughts and just after the race and in the next 24 hours, and I thought there were some good lessons for all of us. My goal was to run about a minute faster than I did. If you're a 35-minute 5K runner, that may sound like I wasn't far off my goal. To me, the difference was as big as my taste preferences between ice cream and beets. It felt like failure. So I decided to ask myself, what can I do with that failure? Well, first I can realize that I did actually accomplish my goal. Sure, my time goal was to run a minute faster than I did, but my reason for running was to gauge my fitness level. I can check that off the list. I may not be happy about where it is, but I now know what I have suspected, and that's a good thing. You can't get where you want to go without knowing where you're starting from. I also learned something about myself this weekend. In the past, there would have been a good chance that I would have run my cool down and gotten in the car and drove home immediately. I would have been so unhappy with my performance that I wouldn't want to talk to anyone about it. But that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, I was able to talk with many people after the race in a positive light. I didn't even make an ugly face when they asked me my time and I told them. In my world, this is called spiritual progress. You see, my focus, which had always been on me and what I did, was turned outward, and I wanted to know about what everyone else had experienced. I now realized how ridiculous it sounds to someone who ran their best race for a guy who finished his race 10 minutes before them to be complaining. I felt like God's voice was in my head saying, "It's not all about you, Dean." For a lot of people, this may be normal. For me, it is a leap forward. I had a terrible pain in my glute during the race. It is something that has been bothering me for a long time. I think I know what I need to do to fix it, and it's going to require some hard work. Instead, I have played around the edges of the solution, hoping for an easier solution to work. I now know that I need to go all in on the problem to finally get rid of it. And that's a good thing, right? My determination to do a bunch of work I do not enjoy is higher than it has ever been because I had a bad day. Praise God. I also noticed the next day that although my glute is in terrible pain, everything else feels really good. That means I'm not in nearly as poor shape as I thought I was immediately following the race. Again, that's a good thing. If I can figure out how to get over the minor injury, I feel that I am in good enough shape to reach my original goal for that race. The Bible tells us over and over in the New Testament how Jesus works on us to perfect us if we will let Him. He will work on us day by day to bring us one step closer to who He is, perfect in our ways. We'll never get there, but we will continue to get better, to be more Christ-like. I am so thankful that God continues to work in me and on me. Now, you may not be like me and obsess over a poor performance, but what is your Achilles heel? What is the thing that keeps you from becoming more perfect? Are you allowing Christ to work in and through you to strive toward that goal? I'm thankful for a poor performance, race performance that shows me that he is working on me, even through things I don't like. Watching God work is amazing, but we must get out of his way and allow it to happen. I have run thousands of races in my life, but it took me a long time to realize the weakness in myself. I had to fail a lot before I was willing to let him help me. I'm so thankful for his intervention.
It's a great perspective, Dean.
I thought it might be interesting to share kind of what goes through our minds after a race. A lot of times we do. We take a bad race or a bad thing that happens in our lives, and we obsess over it, and we get worked up about it, and then we lose. We don't learn the lesson because we're so blinded by what we're unhappy with, right? And so I just thought this was maybe a good thing. And God really has, man. Boy, he has worked on me. I worry about it a little bit. Because to me, in order to run your best, you have to have a little bit of an edge. You have to have a little bit of cockiness about you. You have to have some confidence in yourself, and you have to be willing to dig really deep. And if you let things go too easy, then I feel like you'll lose that edge completely.
Let me ask you this. Because if I'm not mistaken, you won that race, right?
No, I didn't. I was fourth.
Why did I think you won that race?
Because Bill Silvers posted that I won. But I won my age group. I won the Masters division.
I guess that's what I saw.
Yeah.
Okay. Beside the point. How much? Because we were talking beforehand about becoming a coach. So for all those runners out there who are kind of like where you are, who it's just, it's all about my time, my running. How do you think coaching a Run for God class changed your perspective on your own running? Talk about that, because I've heard you mention it before, how you didn't even think about the people in the back. You didn't think about those. That's the reason you got in your car and you went home, because you just weren't thinking about others. How did putting your focus on other people and helping them reach their goals change the perspective on your running?
Yeah, it changed mine. It made me thankful, first of all, that God gives me the ability that he gives me. You know, it's real easy to just take that for granted and not pay attention to it. It's like somebody who's, you know, if you're good at math, you're good at math, and that's a talent and that's a gift. Mm-hmm. And we should be appreciative for that gift. And I'm appreciative for the gift. And you can't really figure that out until you see other people struggle to run a lot slower. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I've seen is that, I guess my thought has always been, I don't want to say, it's not fair to say, the thought I think that ran through my mind was that the people in the back of the pack, they just didn't try as hard as I did. That's what I used to think.
Yeah.
And I see, man, as a matter of fact, in this particular race, I went back, and one of the things I like to do is I like to encourage people as they're finishing, as I cool down. I need my cool down, so I go change my shoes.
You run backwards.
And I run backwards along the course, and I just encourage people as they're running. Well, what I had decided to do in this race was I ran all the way back to the last person, and then I turned around and ran back along with the runners. And my goal was to find the person who was the furthest back in the race, who I felt like was really, really giving it everything. Mm-hmm. There's always those people at the back. They're just walking.
Sure.
And I don't want to sound like walkers are not important. They are. What I'm saying is, though, this person was putting forth everything she had to run as fast as she could. And I wanted to be encouraging to her. And so that's what I did for the last half mile. I followed her in, just encouraging her the whole time. Mm-hmm. And she was really thankful for that. And she wanted to stop and walk several times, and that just wouldn't let her. But again, in the long run, she was thankful for it. I never would have done that because it never even crossed my mind to even think about the folks in the back of the race. Mm-hmm. And so teaching a class has helped me to learn how to focus on those people, because I've grown a much deeper appreciation for those people than I ever had before. And that can never be a bad thing when we start to, again, I never had any bad thoughts about those people. if I just didn't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we can take the focus off of ourselves, it takes something like this day where I have a bad day and I can be all worked up and be fussy about it and be upset and everything else. I've got something else to look forward to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at one time I didn't have anything else to look forward to. No wonder sure. I got in my car and went home because there was nothing else.
That was it. It was done.
That was it. Yeah. So,
of course, that strategy, what you do, it backfired one time on me in a race. I was, what's the Raccoon Mountain? Is that a 10K?
Yeah. There's a 10K and a 5K.
Well, I ran the 10K. And I'll never forget, I ran a pretty good time for me. You know, that was.
And that's a tough course.
When I was running quite a bit. And I'll never forget, I had the best of intentions. I got done and I was doing exactly what you did. I took off to go run. I wasn't going to run the whole course backwards, but I was starting my cool down going backwards.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget, this young boy was coming in and I was like cheering him on. I was starting my cool down and I was cheering him on like, go buddy, go buddy, go buddy. And he was like, oh, I'm finishing my cool down. And what I learned, you know who it was? No. It was a very young Jesse Martinez. That's probably the first time I remember Jesse. And he was probably 10 at the time. And here I am cheering him on like, you're doing a good job. And he's like, I finished 10 minutes ago, you slow old guy. So that it backfired on me one
funny.
Time.
That's funny. Yeah. Well, I just think it's important that. And the other thing about when we have a talent, you know, what we're talking about Samson in our weekly sermons right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Samson just, he had so much and he just squandered it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to squander what God's given me. And I think that's important that I don't do the Samson thing.
Well, and it's the reason I asked you the question, because I think it's important, because I think there's a lot of people out there who are where you were. It's where I was when I first started Run for God, that sometimes it can become all about us. I mean, faith in Christ is very diluted if we don't share it.
Mm.
And it's the reason why we make the statement, one of the kind of the catchphrases for what we say to coaches is, whether you're taking the class or whether you're teaching the class, being a 5K challenge, it will change your life. And if you're out there and you've heard us talking about teaching and coaching and you're like, you know, that's not for me. You know, it is absolutely for you.
Yeah.
Whether you're a back of the packer or whether you're winning races.
Yeah.
It will absolutely change your perspective and, I argue, give you more joy in this sport as a result.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share running and walking tips each day, as well as encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be a Run Club member for access to this exciting challenge. So, if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, what are you waiting for?
Every week, I share a reason why running and or walking are so awesome. And this is this week. This goes along with what we're talking about. We're more hardcore. You know, the saying, our sport is your sport's punishment.
Yep.
Well, that's true.
It is.
Right? And so we like to be hardcore. And we get pretty defensive, too, when people. This past week, I was listening to something. I think it was on a television. Actually, it was on a podcast that was part of a television. Anyway, I heard somebody say something about, he made the comment that marathon running was not a real sport.
Mm.
Whoa. I almost fell down. I was like, whoa. Because I was listening to it while I was running. And I was like, well, what did he just say? And this was a guy that I like to listen to, you know. And it was like, well, hold on a second, buddy. When you and I
feel another letter going out from Dean.
Yeah, we're about to go round and round. But why was I so offended? Well, I was so offended because you know, he was taking it lightly. And I'm like, no, we're you don't understand. We're hardcore people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's this week's reason. We had some world records in track and field this week. Did you see the Faith Kipyegon record? She ran another world record in the 1500, 349 low. And it was great. And she's the GOAT. I mean, she is the best female 1500 meter runner ever. There's no question about it. She lowered her own record. But the biggest story of the race was Jessica Hull. So Jessica Hull she's 27 years old now, but she graduated from the University of Oregon. And so everybody in America knows her. She's from Australia, though. And Jessica Hull's always been good. And I think her PR was 3:55. So she was a good runner. But she just hung on Faith Kipyegon the whole way. And you could see Faith going into the last lap, Faith Kipyegon. She looks over her shoulder and she sees Jessica Hull there. And you could see the look on her face of astonishment. Like, why is somebody right here with me? I'm running fast. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if maybe it registered in her head that, am I not running as fast as I think I am? Or what's going on here? Because this doesn't make any sense. Well, Jessica Hull winds up running 3:50 in this race.
Wow.
Which is like a 5-second PR. Actually, it's 7 seconds faster than she had run this year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And she seems like a good girl. A girl, women, whatever, whatever word you want to use there, but she just seems like she's so nice. But there was a second world record in that same meet, a lady by the name of Yaroslava Mahuchik. She's from Ukraine, and she broke the high jump world record.
I saw a video of that.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Well, she just barely made it, too. I mean, she rubbed that bar all the way over.
Mm-hmm.
But she did it, and that record was 38 years old, I think.
Yeah.
It's always cool to see those old records go down, I think.
Well, you know what amazed me about that? Of course, it's every athlete at that level, but especially the clip that I saw. And same thing with Sydney. How effortless they make a world record look.
Yeah.
I mean, you could tell she was as shocked as anybody when she cleared that bar. I mean, she was so excited when she looked up and saw the bar was still there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the athleticism and the years that we know went into that. It's just really amazing to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. A lot of people say use terms like, well, they're an overnight success. They are, but it took them 20 years to become an overnight success.
That's exactly right.
You know,
yeah.
It's fun to watch that level of talent.
Yeah. When you know that they have worked all that time and worked that hard.
For a jump.
Yeah.
That's the cry. I mean, you can talk about marathons and all that. And yes, that's equally as impressive. But for people to work 20 years for... What does it take to run down the track and do a jump? 10 seconds? 5 seconds?
Yeah, I mean, 5 seconds tops, yeah.
Yeah, and all that for that moment, which is also what makes, what's the young lady that fell? That was just heartbroken.
I think Mo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It can be snatched away and just as quick, and that hurts to watch because you know what went into the preparation for that.
Yep. And it makes those things more fun to watch when you can tie into them emotionally like that.
Which I think is why the track and field is so appealing in the Olympics to people because they do the backstories and you get to know these people, you feel like, and through these, you know, mini documentaries that they do.
That's true. Well, we talked about the third place finisher in the 5,000 at the Olympic trials named Parker Wolf from North Carolina. It does turn out he did not get the world ranking points. So... the fourth place finisher, Graham Blanks, is going to be the one that gets to go to the Olympics because he had the qualifying time. He's from Georgia, the state of Georgia. He goes to Harvard, but he's from the state of Georgia. So cool to see a Georgia boy going to the Olympics. So, and Graham Blanks had been hurt. So just the fact that he was able to run it, he barely made it into the final. He made it into the final on time because... he hadn't been running great because he's still trying to. So his fitness level should be better at the Olympics. So maybe he'll do well. Our trivia question for this week. Again, we're going to stay on this Olympic thing till the Olympics are over. Most people know about Jesse Owens and Carl Lewis, who each won 4 gold medals in the Olympic Games. But who was the woman who won 4 Olympic gold medals in the 1948 Olympics in London?
If anybody has that on the top of their head, I'm going to be very impressed.
I am too, because I didn't know this one. So I'm so surprised that there's somebody this accomplished that I had not heard of. So yeah. This is a good one. So if you're the first person that's a Run Club member that sends that answer to me at dean@runforgod.com, then you'll win $20 off in the Run for God store. So who was the woman who won 4 gold medals in track and field in the 1948 Olympics? Our motivational thought of the week comes from Wayne Dyer. We may have used this once a while back, but I like it. If you believe it will work, you'll see opportunities. If you believe it won't, you will see obstacles.
That's a great quote. All about perspective.
It really is. Yep. It's amazing how hard we'll work to get something done that we believe in. And it's amazing how many excuses we'll make not to get something done that we don't believe in.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah. All right. Well, that's 226.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's been fun.
It has been fun.
Let's do it 226 more.
Let's do that. I like it. Yep. All right. Until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about the Run for God ministry, go to runforgod.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There's nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.